This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello, this is Joel Hilliker, managing editor of the Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. We have an electrifying show today. It can be bewildering to keep up with all the scandals, investigations, accusations, and infighting happening within the American government these days. But the Trumpet offers you a perspective on what is really happening you will not get anywhere else. It is the spiritual and biblically prophetic view. If you follow mainstream news sources, you're getting a very distorted view. There are some sources out there giving good information, helping you to see a picture closer to reality, but only here will you hear why this is happening, and it's a perspective that is truly important. We can't afford to just tune this out as a bunch of noise. We have to understand what this portends for the future of America and even the world. You can expect to hear more about this subject in the time ahead on this program and on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with Stephen Fleury, because we really do feel a sense of responsibility to inform you about this. Today, we're going to give you somewhat of a brief overview. You could say a bit of a foretaste of more in-depth reporting to come. This will include a report from Trumpet writer Andrew Miller on the deep state. This is the unelected individuals staffing the bureaucracies within the executive branch of the government that are currently in a war with the president, who is the head of that branch. This is a type of internal conflict that America's founders did not foresee when they established the checks and balances of the three branches of government. And it's extremely revealing and very dangerous to the survival of the country. I also want to encourage you to stick around for later in the program. We're going to have a report by Dwight Falk, the station manager here at KPCG. He's been studying into the spread of a terrible scourge in society that is bigger than you think, a greater danger to our families and our children than you think, and that is pedophilia. He's collected some information that will shock you, but that you need to hear. And I'll finish the program today by giving you the best marriage advice in the world. I can say that without qualification. It's a bit of advice that will make all the difference in making your marriage great. We'll start, though, by talking about the spectacle unfolding in the American government.
You're going to have to answer
this. But it wasn't because of you. Was it your request to postpone, or was it you or the committee?
So today, law enforcement in New York City raided the law office of Michael Cohen, who is the lawyer for President Donald Trump.
You need to recognize the real scope of the history unfolding before your eyes. Again, we're not interested in giving you a partisan view of this. The Trumpet is not pro-Trump or anti-Trump. We're interested in how events are fulfilling the prophecies of the Bible and leading to the end of this age and the second coming of Jesus Christ. And what we are witnessing right now is a war waged by people who wittingly or unwittingly are working to bring America down from within. For the entire duration of the Trump presidency, and even before, when it became clear he would win the Republican nomination, the media have focused on every bit of unflattering, embarrassing, salacious information they could find about this man. And sadly, there's no small amount of it. America has never had a president whose past sins were so public, a president who has provided so much fodder for disdain through popular tools like social media. But the president's enemies in the media and within the government aren't just publicizing the things that are known and provable. They're also fixating on things that are just implied or alleged or possible or even proven downright false. This is a man who has been in the public eye his entire life. He's been friends with media stars and with politicians, including a lot of Democrats like Hillary Clinton. Real estate deals, properties all over the map. He's had a hugely popular reality show for 14 years. But then he ran for president, and suddenly he was a joke, a clown, a buffoon, a fool,
Donald Trump is not going to be president of the United States. Take it to the bank. Okay. I guarantee it.
All right. All right.
Donald Trump has been saying that he will run for president as a Republican, which is surprising since I just assumed he was running as a joke.
And then he started to win in the primaries, and he eventually claimed the Republican nomination. And then the attacks against him turned a lot more serious. And since Donald Trump actually won the presidency, his enemies in the media and in the government have done everything possible to depict this man as deranged, stupid, unstable, incoherent, senile, corrupt, immoral, chauvinist, misogynist, bigoted, racist, white supremacist, nationalist, a warmonger, as they carry out these relentless condemnations and attack on this man. They are revealing something far more serious and threatening than the specifics of the accusations they're making. They're revealing that they are willing to do virtually anything to undo the results of the last presidential election and to reclaim power. In the 2016 presidential election, Donald Trump won 57% of the electoral votes, 30 out of 50 states. He won 84% of the counties in America, compared to Hillary Clinton winning not quite 16% of the counties. He received nearly 63 million votes, the highest vote total of any Republican candidate in history. We're seeing that there is a massive contingent within the government and the media and within the American populace that does not and will not accept that result.
You're awake, by the way. You're not having a terrible, terrible dream. Also, you're not dead and you haven't gone to hell. This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country.
People have talked about a miracle. I'm hearing about a nightmare.
I have no respect for women who voted for Trump, okay? Yeah. I think so poorly of them, and the reason why is because I just think you're dumb.
The election of Donald J. Trump to the presidency represented a blow to their claim to power and their ambitions to remake this country as they see fit. And so we are now getting a remarkable look at just what this contingent of Americans want to do and just what they're willing to do in order to make sure that that happens. We're seeing how deep their power within the government really goes. We're seeing how deceitful and lawless and just plain nasty they really are. We're seeing the results of their hostility to the law of the land, to the Constitution, and the limits to their power that the Constitution imposes. We're seeing the results of their hostility to the freedoms that the Constitution gives the American people against them. We're seeing the true nature of this movement and what a serious threat to the foundational principles of America it really is. The lid is being lifted on this movement in a way that it never would have been exposed if Hillary Clinton had been elected. And it reveals just how close this nation is to collapse. And astoundingly, there are many people within this country who would love to see this happen, and they are working to bring this about. This is why we at The Trumpet feel compelled to focus on these developments. America's downfall is one of the most earth-shaking end-time prophecies of the Bible. It's foretold in dozens of biblical passages, and it is a prophecy that we've been warning about for decades, since Herbert W. Armstrong wrote the first version of the United States and Britain in prophecy back in the 1930s. And what we are seeing right now is directly leading to the fulfillment of this prophecy of America's downfall.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
Washington has never seen such rancorous interagency warfare as what is occurring right now between the White House and what's referred to as the deep state, agencies like the Justice Department and the FBI. For a report on this, we will hear now from Trumpet writer Andrew Miller.
It's no exaggeration to say that United States President Donald Trump is at war with his own spies. In the past, federal intelligence agencies and the White House generally formed a united front. But now it has been revealed that the Department of Justice cooperated with the Federal Bureau of Investigation to spy on the Trump presidential campaign in 2016. These agencies fraudulently used an unverified dossier paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign to obtain a secret court order to wiretap President Trump's inner circle. This has led to a deep rift between the Trump administration and the U.S. intelligence community. President Trump is working to expose corruption in the FBI and the rest of the intelligence community. Last November, he denounced former Director of Central Intelligence John Brennan and former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper as political hacks. Now, many journalists and media figures have rallied to defend America's spies from President Trump. Yet there is a great danger in overlooking the serious charges Trump and others have made against the intelligence community. We are witnessing the growth of a surveillance state with powers even George Orwell couldn't have imagined. In the 1970s, Senator Frank Church led an investigation into illegal CIA, FBI, and NSA intelligence gathering activities. And on NBC's Meet the Press, he issued this warning. If this government ever becomes a tyranny, if a dictator ever took charge in this country, the technological capacity that the intelligence community has given the government could enable it to impose a total tyranny. And there would be no way to fight back because the most careful efforts to combine together in resistance to the government, no matter how privately it was done, is within the reach of the government to know. These technological capacities that Senator Church warned about grew much stronger during the presidencies of George W. Bush and Barack Obama. Now, President Bush signed an executive order in 2002 authorizing the NSA to eavesdrop on U.S. citizens and foreign nationals if the government suspected that they had ties to terrorists. Even though President Obama promised to curb this type of data collection, he ended up greatly expanding the powers of the American surveillance state instead.
I will leave this office at some point, sometime in the next 3.5 years. And after that, I will be a private citizen. And I suspect that on a list of people who might be targeted so that somebody could read their emails or listen to their phone calls, I'd probably be pretty high on that list. But I know that the people who are involved in these programs, they operate like professionals. And these things are very narrowly circumscribed. They're very focused. And in the abstract, you can complain about Big Brother and how this is a potential, program run amok. But when you actually look at the details, then I think we've struck the right balance.
James Banford writes in The New Republic, assuming that past norms would be future norms, Obama created the most powerful surveillance state the world has ever seen. Over 8 years, he spent more than $100 billion on everything from eavesdropping satellites encircling the globe to a million-square-foot building in the Utah desert for storing massive troves of intercepted data, to secret taps on hundreds of thousands of miles of undersea cables that carry everything from tweets to Google searches to endless chatter. He also unleashed fleets of killer drones around the world, authorized the assassinations of Americans without trial, and jailed more whistleblowers than all previous presidents combined. And now it's been revealed that President Obama called a meeting of key officials from the U.S. intelligence community on January 5th, 2017. These officials discussed how the investigation of the Trump campaign could continue after Mr. Trump was sworn in as president. Now, if these officials could have successfully kept Donald Trump out of office, They would have overturned the results of a Democratic election and effectively staged a deep state coup. This would have ultimately meant the end of America's constitutional system of government. If government spies can use unverified rumors to keep a political candidate they don't like out of office, we are no longer living in a democratic republic. We're living in an authoritarian technocracy. These are facts that are being glossed over by journalists that jump to defend the FBI from President Trump. Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution makes the president the chief of the executive branch. And so what happens when elements of the executive branch go rogue and start fighting against their boss? The best case scenario is political gridlock. The worst case scenario is civil war. In the past, in other nations like Turkey or Egypt, the people have actually risen up against the government when the intelligence community has tried to overturn the results of a democratic election. The rifts between the Trump administration and the intelligence community are far more serious than most people realize. The president is at war with the most powerful surveillance state to ever exist, and things stand to get messy. More and more Americans need to realize that their government is sick and their nation is faint. And there is a spiritual reason for this. The prophet Isaiah wrote in Isaiah chapter 1, verses 4 through 5, "Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the Lord. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger, and they are gone away backward. Why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, and the whole heart is faint." Now, the Trump administration is trying to fight against some of these nefarious activities done by the deep state. But the more it tries to do this, the more divided America becomes. And this is because America's problems are not actually the result of one man or even a small group of men. They are the results of the sins of the American people as a whole. And only national repentance can bring the entire nation to a point where God can fix America's dangerous divisions.
Thank you very much for that report, Andrew. So I feel like a lot of people, as they're watching this happen, and they see, say, the Mueller investigation against Donald Trump, and they see the way that the Department of Justice is behaving, the FBI is behaving, I think a lot of people would look at this as justifiable actions against a man that they deem to be unfit for office, and that there's something maybe even noble about these officials kind of taking the actions that they are in order to, you know, extreme circumstances require extreme measures, that kind of an approach. It seems like there's a pretty good contingent of Americans that have that kind of a mindset about this. You made a point in your report about how if we're allowing our government officials to conduct their business this way, we're actually no longer living under the constitutional republic system that the founders created. Could you just talk more about that and what the real threat of this kind of behavior among government officials is?
Right, because you can claim that Donald Trump is fit for office, or you can claim that he's unfit for office, but the fact remains that under our system of government, we have a way of choosing the next president of the United States based on voting and based on the Electoral College. And this is all very intricately described in our Constitution. And so when you have a group of people working for the CIA or the FBI who've decided that, well, we don't think this man is fit for office, so we need to stop him from being president, they're elevating their own will amongst the will of the American people and against the legal system our Constitution has established. Mm-hmm. And this is really what happened, based on what we know so far, is a classic case of projection, where you accuse your opponent of what you yourself are guilty of, because they're claiming that, like, okay, the Russians hacked the election. Like, all right, well, from what we know, the Democratic National Committee hired a former British intelligence agent, to collect unverified rumors from Russia, leak those rumors to the media, create a Russian collusion scandal,
right,
and use that to either, one, convince enough people not to vote for him that he doesn't get elected in the first place, or two, if he does get elected, use that in impeachment trials to get him ousted from office. But that report is based on nothing more than the rumors coming from some thugs in Russia that this man working for the Hillary Clinton campaign collected. Mm-hmm. And so now this is actually like FBI officials, Department of Justice officials, White House officials using what amounts to unverified propaganda to keep a man they don't like from office, mm-hmm. which is election rigging. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the type of thing you'd expect from an authoritarian government in Russia or North Korea or any other dictatorship or authoritarian government, which you've got these agents in the so-called deep state now, which are saying, well, we know better than the people in the voting booths. So we need to start paying for some opposition research and strategically leaking that opposition research to certain media outlets that we can build an impeachment campaign based on nothing but rumors so that we can keep someone who we approve of in the government. And that is technocratic officials trying to choose the next leader of the United States instead of letting the democratic process happen, which is why I made the comment earlier that says if you can pull that off, they haven't successfully pulled it off, at least not yet. You aren't living in a constitutional republic. You are living in an authoritarian technocracy where FBI and CIA officials choose the next president of the United States.
So when you look at the way that they're conducting themselves, and I talked about it earlier in that opening segment about just how they're branding him as, just an irredeemably evil individual in every way. And so many of the accusations that they're making against him, his predecessors have been guilty of the same kinds of things, if not worse. And yet they were silent on when it came to those individuals, because those individuals, the President Trump's immediate successor being one of them, was complicit in this agenda that they want to enact. And so they're very willing to overlook many transgressions of a lot of different varieties in pursuit of establishing their this agenda. But when it comes to somebody who, it does seem like Donald Trump has uniquely set himself up as he's kind of the ultimate outsider, and he came into power with men like Steve Bannon on his team, who had a stated objective right from the very beginning to make war against the deep state. He posed kind of a unique threat to this whole organization within the government. And so they've really brought out all the big guns, every single tool and weapon that they possibly could in order to take him down.
Yeah, that is amazing how, especially when you're looking at partisan politics, how quickly you can switch from one side of the issue to the other. And that quote I had read from Senator Frank Church about the total tyranny that the government could impose, mm-hmm. Using this massive surveillance apparatus. I mean, he was actually, Senator Church was a political liberal warning about the U.S. government wiretapping Martin Luther King and some civil rights activist, and even up through the George W. Bush era, when he started wiretapping people with suspected terrorist ties to Al-Qaeda, it was mostly the liberal side of the political spectrum really just denouncing how authoritarian this type of surveillance apparatus could be. And they made some good points in those arguments. And it wasn't really till, even Senator Barack Obama, before he was president, during his campaign, really warned about how tyrannical the Bush administration was becoming, and how if he was going to elect it, he was going to curb all of these huge surveillance states apparatus. And he didn't do that. As a matter of fact, he's like tenfold worse than President Bush was on his worst day. Mm-hmm. He built the biggest government surveillance apparatus in the world, and the liberal political establishment just got on board with that to the point where now they're defending this FBI and CIA wiretapping against President Trump because, you mentioned Steve Bannon, who when he was in the Trump administration for a while, who said that was basically his life's goal was to dismantle the administrative state. Neil Gorsuch, who President Trump nominated to the latest Supreme Court justice, was also someone who was very vocal on trying to downsize these huge executive agencies that are going rogue and are not accountable to the president in the way that the founding fathers had designed they would be accountable. Mm-hmm. And so you could see why some of these people in the FBI and the CIA would be a little nervous with someone like President Trump in office, who is looking at downsizing their department.
Well, I think when you talk about, say, that Senator Church quote that you mentioned, and what would happen if the United States actually became tyrannical? I don't think most Americans really give that much thought. I don't think that there are too many people who are terribly concerned about the threat, an actual threat posed by the government turning tyrannical. And yet, that's why I think it's so important that we look at what was happening under the Obama administration, and we look at the way that these officials are conducting themselves now that there's a man who posed a threat to those designs. And Gerald Fleury has been talking about this, and I don't think too many people really took some of the warnings that he gave very seriously. When he wrote America Under Attack back in 2013, he talked about this and really trying to help people to see that we're not just talking about a man. We're not just talking about a presidency. We're not even just talking about the deep state. We're talking about a spiritual influence that is involved here, aimed at taking down the United States, this superpower. And we do see that there was a real concerted effort to introduce tyranny to the United States. In other words, it was the very thing that I don't think most Americans would consider to be a problem. That is exactly what was happening.
Right. And actually, one political liberal who I do really respect is Jonathan Turley, who's a constitutional professor at Georgetown University. And he actually agreed with a lot of Barack Obama's specific policies. But what he warned about was the way he was pushing through those policies. They said he's ruling by executive order. He's undermining the checks and balances. Mr. Turley's, Professor Turley's particular case, he said, I kind of like what he's done with those powers, but I am just really concerned that there might be a president in the future who I don't agree with so much, who could use these powers to just override the will of the American people. Yep. And that is, Mr. Fleury really does make that point very powerfully in his book, America Under Attack, where he talks about many of the executive orders President Obama pushed through and a lot of the spying apparatus he pushed through, to where he was ruling like a dictator with the powers that he was able to attain by empowering this government bureaucracy, empowering the administrative state, empowering the deep state, with the tactic support of the majority of the American people at the time. And now you've got something where, a president from the other side of the political spectrum has come to power, but he's, instead of being like the head of this deep state apparatus, he's at war with the deep state apparatus his predecessor left him.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I alluded to, the Trumpet's editor-in-chief, Gerald Fleury, he's been writing about the spiritual dimension to the dangers to America for several years now. It started with his booklet, America Under Attack, which was published first in 2013. But he shows that the problem is bigger than a few partisan bureaucrats or one political party. It's bigger than even the mainstream media, although all of these are expressions of the problem. The real force that's attacking America is an evil spirit power that is working diligently to bring this nation down and really plunge the world into a new Holocaust. And the reason why this is happening, and you alluded to it at the end of your report there, it is because of the sins of the people. You talked about the prophet Isaiah making that point in the first chapter of the book of Isaiah, another prophecy that Gerald Fleury draws a lot of attention to within America Under Attack and what he's written since then. is in Daniel 8, and it's talking about a spiritual issue there, but really there's a blueprint that was established there that we see happening within the United States as well. And a point that it brings out there is that this is happening because of the sins of the people. The phrase that it uses there is by reason of transgression that this host is multiplying, this kind of demon army within the nation. It's the sins of the people that cause this. And to me, when I look at what's happening here and just how cavalier so many Americans are watching their freedoms being eroded and applauding elements within the government taking power unto themselves and casting the Constitution aside and acting at will, as you said, imposing their will over the will of the electorate within the country, applauding the very things that are dismantling the protections that the Constitution affords them, I think there is a really strong corollary there, that it is the sins of the people. And of course, that's not the only sins that for which this nation is being judged. We're going to talk about other sins in the next segment in the program today. But I urge every listener to read Gerald Fleury's cover story of the new Trumpet print edition. This is the May, June 2018 edition called Saving America from the Radical Left Temporarily. You can go online to thetrumpet.com, find this article. You can find it under the library tab. It has the link to the Trumpet magazine. This is the cover story. And this article, Saving America from the Radical Left Temporarily, Gerald Fleury writes, "The drama unfolding in Washington is something you cannot afford to ignore. We are witnessing a government and a nation on the verge of collapse." This article really gives you this biblically prophetic perspective. It even shows how the Trump presidency is fulfilling a specific prophecy about America. It's a crucial perspective that you need. This article really shows how God is actually orchestrating these events to bring about these prophecies, and it will help you to gain God's view of what is happening to America today. Well, thanks so much for your time, Andrew. We appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
There is a dangerous scourge spreading in today's world that poses a serious threat to our children and to society as a whole. It is pedophilia, and it's a bigger problem than you probably think, as we'll hear in this report from Dwight Falk.
A Wisconsin man was sentenced to 60 years in prison for listing his 4-year-old daughter for sex under the heading "Play with Daddy's Little Girl" on Craigslist. Harris County Assistant District Attorney Stawana Miskell said, "This case broke my heart. A father is supposed to be a protector, not a predator." And this man told the would-be customer that he had a girl, quote, younger than 10, that he would give sleep meds for an encounter. He charged $1,000 for 2 hours with his daughter. Where are the God-fearing fathers in America and Britain today? Where are the protectors? Like the district attorney said, a father should be a protector and not a predator. Pedophilia is exploding. The crux of the issue is this: when the fathers leave, the pedophiles enter. Child pornography is one of the fastest growing crimes in the United States right now. Nationally, there has been a 2,500% increase in arrests in the past 10 years, according to the FBI. 2,500% increase. The United States Justice Department estimates that close to 300,000 American youth are currently at risk for being victims of commercial sexual exploitation. The prisons are full of sex offenders. 2/3 of those sex offenders in state prisons committed offenses against children. There are more than 747,000 registered sex offenders in the United States today, and as many as 100,000 of those are noncompliant and missing. They're on the streets, and they could be in your neighborhood. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children reports that the best data suggests that at least 100,000 American children a year are victimized through child sexual exploitation. More children are victimized than the number of people that die from car accidents and illegal drugs combined in America. That's a startling statistic. But it's hard to pin down the actual numbers. According to the National Center for Victims of Crime, the prevalence of sexual abuse is difficult to determine because it is often not reported. Experts agree that the incidence is far greater than what is reported to authorities. Out of every 1,000 sexual assaults, 310 are reported, and that's according to RAIN.org. During a one-year period in the United States, 16% of youth ages 14 to 17 had been sexually victimized. Over the course of their lifetime, 28% of U.S. youth ages 14 to 17 had been sexually victimized. And there's a terrible slide to this evil. What mental health experts have learned is that when someone becomes addicted to child pornography, they usually progress to younger and younger children and will seek out more sadistic or masochistic images, and in extreme cases, bestiality. The problems get worse and worse, and the dangers are growing because of online technology. 93% of teens aged 12 to 17 go online. Of children 5 years old and younger who use the internet, 80% use it at least once a week. And 1 in 25 children ages 10 to 17 received an online sexual solicitation where the solicitor tried to make offline contact. In other words, they wanted to meet them somewhere. The internet is opening up a new portal to this evil. In 82% of online sex crimes against minors, the offender used the victim's social networking site to gain information about the victim's likes and dislikes. 65% of online sex offenders use the victim's social networking site to gain home and school information about the victim, and 26% of online sex offenders use that information from social networks to find out where the victim would be at a specific time. 63% of teens said they know how to hide what they do online from their parents. Even if the parents are in the home and they're not paying attention to what the children are doing, the children are still very vulnerable to predators. The Association for the Treatment of Sexual Abusers found that the average number of victims for non-incestuous pedophiles who molest girls is 20. For pedophiles who prefer boys, the number jumps to 100. And if not stopped, an average serial child molester may have as many as 400 victims in his lifetime. The point is that when the fathers leave, the pedophiles enter. Which children are being abused? There are specific types of children that the abusers are looking for. According to the Children's Assessment Center, perpetrators report that they look for passive, quiet, troubled, lonely children from single-parent or broken homes. Perpetrators frequently seek out children who are particularly trusting and work proactively to establish a trusting relationship before abusing them. Not infrequently, this extends to establishing a trusting relationship with the victim's family as well. The family structure is so important, and when the family structure is wrong, the children are at risk. Matter of fact, they say family structure is the most important risk factor in child sexual abuse. Children who live with two married biological parents are at low risk for abuse. The risk increases when children live with step-parents or a single parent. Children living without either parent, foster children, are 10 times more likely to be sexually abused than children that live with both biological parents. Children who live with a single parent that has a live-in partner are at the highest risk for abuse. They are 20 times more likely to be victims of child sexual abuse than children living with both biological parents. When the families are destroyed, the children are at the greatest risk. When the fathers are gone, that's when the pedophiles come in. And this disease of pedophilia is spreading rapidly. James Young, who is a reporter for the BBC, traveled to Japan for a BBC documentary, Sex, Robots, and Us. He was left shocked by the petite size of some of its ultra-realistic dolls. The visibly disturbed presenter grew tearful as he grilled manufacturer Hiro Ukawa about one particularly small doll, who told him the actual age setting was left to customers' imagination. There may be some kind of sentiment to petite, kid-like size, the factory boss conceded. Afterwards, the shaken presenter said the sight of such a young doll was, quote, horrific. I just had to get out of there, said the BBC Three presenter. The customers want child-sized sex dolls. Make no mistake, the pedophiles are coming, and the fathers aren't there to stop them. But the thing to remember is that God is a father. In Exodus 22, God warns that if any afflict the widow or the fatherless, that God's wrath will wax hot and he will kill them with the sword. Leviticus 20, God warned Israel that if they sacrificed their children to Molech, they would be killed. They were to be stoned with stones. And Molech was a pagan god that some would sacrifice their children to, causing them to pass through the fire and be burned. In Proverbs 6, God gives this warning. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? And the point that he brings out is that any sexual sin not only destroys the one that's abused, but the abuser. Both are being burned in the fire. The children are being burned, and the abusers are burning themselves. And ultimately, if not stopped, the whole civilization burns. Recently, a popular comedian did a monologue at the beginning of a national network comedy show, and he made a joke about pedophilia. He said, pedophiles know they will get into serious trouble if they get caught, but they take the risk, he said. And the conclusion to his joke was that since they are willing to take the risk, pedophilia must be really good. The audience groaned. There were a few laughs. But maybe the audience should have thought about history. In Genesis 19 is recorded the history of the end of Sodom and Gomorrah. And you're probably familiar with that history. Two angels came to Lot and told him to leave because God was going to burn those wicked cities to the ground because of their perversions. Now the wicked men of those areas came to Lot's house demanding that the two men, the two strangers, be sent out because the mob wanted to rape them. Now these two angels used supernatural power, and they smote that mob with blindness. And still, the men groped for the door, trying to get in. They were so overcome by their perversions that even blindness wouldn't stop their attack. And pedophiles are willing to risk their freedom to abuse children. Even the threat of going to prison isn't enough to stop their attack. But the history of Sodom and Gomorrah, in a lot of ways, revolves around fathers. Lot faced the mob to try to protect his house. He pleaded with the mob. He went out. He stood between the mob and his house. And finally, the Eternal stood between Lot's family and those men of Sodom and Gomorrah. In Genesis 19, verses 24 through 25, it says this, then the Eternal rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Eternal out of heaven, And he overthrew those cities, and all the plain, and all the inhabitants of the cities, and that which grew upon the ground. Now, the Eternal was the God that became Jesus Christ in the New Testament. And he said this in Luke 17 about his second coming. Likewise also, as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. When the fathers are gone, the pedophiles come. But then God comes, and he burns it all to the ground.
Appreciate that very much, Dwight. That is a really chilling report. It's something that we don't really like to think about, but we need to think about it. I think you did a very good job of just pointing out how important it is that parents be vigilant to this. And but when you're looking at the spread of this, it really seems like a lot of this comes down to the fact that there aren't people who are standing up and willing to put a stop to it. And in a lot of ways, you see this kind of being normalized, like a lot of sexual behavior in society today.
Yeah, absolutely. And that point's brought out really well in the Redefining Family book, which you worked on, to where we saw that same trend happen with the homosexual movement in the last few decades, for certain, to now it's commonplace and accepted. On the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, Stephen Fleury pointed out one of the movies, it was a homosexual relationship, and the boy is 17 years old in that one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 17, that's close to 18. You know, they're testing it seems like, to where if society keeps going with this shoulder shrug mentality of just, well, to each their own, and who am I to judge?
Right.
But we do see a slide in this society to acceptance of something that was unthinkable, unspeakable, right, just a few years ago.
Right. You bring that out in the report, just how there tends to be this progression. Once someone begins to go down that road, then, you know, it starts with seemingly less perverse elements, and then it drifts into worse and worse types of acts, to the point where that initial report that you brought out about the fellow down in Texas, I mean, it's hard. How hard does a human mind have to get to the point where he's willing to medicate his own 4-year-old daughter in order to make money with whoever may come? It just reminds me of the statement that Paul brings out in 2 Timothy, where it says that people in this age will be without natural affection. Just natural affection would cause a father to say, you know, to try to keep his daughter safe from any of that kind of influence, rather than actually putting her out there and marketing her for that purpose.
Absolutely. And one of the things about that story, too, is that the man lived in Wisconsin at the time, and his daughter lived in Texas with the daughter's mother. So it was a broken family. Like the report pointed out, when you have those fractured families and broken families, that's when the children are at risk, because that natural affection is gone.
Right. One of the strongest cases that you could make for why God's law is so important, and the way that the movement to normalize this type of thing, they use words like tolerance and love, and they try to make it out like this is there's something just about allowing people to do these types of things, when anyone in his right mind should be able to see that we're talking about predators who are using people who are helpless of themselves. They're victimizing these individuals in order to satisfy their own lusts, and those people need protection from these predators. And when you look at, say, those scriptures that you went to, where you look at God's attitude toward this, you see the love of God in stepping in and doing something about this. It hasn't happened yet, but the promises are there, the prophecies are there, that this is the way that God is going to handle it. I would encourage anybody who is listening to this to go online to thetrumpet.com, check out our booklet, Redefining Family. That was written some years ago. In a lot of ways, what we see happening in society has gotten many times worse in just the last 3 or 4 years. Another booklet that is really gives you a strong idea of just what God's feelings are about this and how wrathful he is about it is one written by Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury. It's called The Epistles of Peter, A Living Hope, and it goes into some of the prophecies that the Apostle Peter wrote in the New Testament. This isn't just an Old Testament message. This is New Testament, and it is something that every listener needs to be aware of, not only to protect their own families, but even to understand just how great a danger this is to society, because we are going to suffer judgment for what we're allowing to happen in our midst. Well, thanks a lot, Dwight. We really appreciate you bringing that report.
You're welcome.
It's time for today's last word.
Why did God create human beings male and female? He made us in his own image and likeness, but unlike himself, he split us into two sexes. You can see that in Genesis 1. He carefully, intricately, and brilliantly created us to complement each other physically, mentally, and emotionally. Together in marriage, we two become one flesh, it says in Genesis 2. These differences are complementary, but they are differences. And if you don't understand them, or you work against them, or you try to ignore them or erase them, they'll cause unending perplexity, frustration, and friction. The creator of male and female sent instructions for how to make his creation function marvelously. Ephesians 5, verses 22 through 33 encapsulate these principles better than bookshelves full of self-help books with marriage advice. But it takes a lot of depth to really understand it, and it takes faith to apply it. To women who want to understand men, the Apostle Paul says, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything." A woman who applies this instruction will be fulfilling a man's greatest need from her: respect. God made the man to excel when admired and encouraged by the woman. God made him to be respected as the leader and to be bolstered and encouraged by her recognition of his achievements. He needs the loyalty and support of the woman. He needs to be understood for his masculine interests, drives, and ambitions. He needs honest feedback and responsive support for his ideas, suggestions, and requests. Her appreciation for the things he does gives him a kind of confidence that only she can provide. Women, don't view this need in men as a weakness. Treat it as God's design. Accept it, embrace it, and make yourself expert in meeting that need. Now, to men who want to understand women, Paul says, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loves his wife loves himself." A man who applies this instruction will be fulfilling a woman's greatest need from him: love. A woman needs attention. She needs appreciation, approval, and sincere compliments. She needs people and personal relationships. She needs to be loved, respected, and treated with tenderness. She needs a shoulder to cry on without fear of rejection. Her opinions and wisdom count, and she needs to know that the man recognizes that. She needs to know a man appreciates her differences and tries to understand her emotional makeup. She needs him to be sensitive, protective, and caring of her total welfare. Men, don't view this need in women as a weakness. Realize that it is God's design. Accept it, embrace it, and make yourself expert in meeting her need. Ephesians 5 boils all this wisdom down to one marvelous verse, verse 33. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. Reverence means respect, venerate, treat with deference. This is a command, but it's also an insight into the deepest needs of men and women. Women need love. Men need respect. When both the man's needs and the woman's needs are met, a virtuous cycle begins. A woman who is loved finds it far easier to show respect, and a man who's respected finds it far easier to show love. Now, when those needs are not met, the cycle turns vicious. If a woman doesn't receive love, she tends to withhold respect. If a man doesn't receive respect, he tends to withhold love. That's the natural tendency. And when we give into that, marriages become train wrecks. Ephesians 5 does not say, husbands, love her as long as she respects you, or wives, reverence him as long as he shows love. For this to work, husbands must love unconditionally. Wives must respect unconditionally. A man must love his wife even when she isn't lovable. He must govern his thoughts and actions toward love. A wife must respect her husband even when he isn't respectable. She must govern her thoughts so as not just to show reverence, but to be reverent. God's ground rules for marriage are all about the way of give. A man must give love to a woman. A woman must give reverence and submission to a man. A man must give godly leadership to a woman, leadership that earns her respect and that's a joy to submit to. And a woman must be a lovable woman to recognize, encourage, and receive a man's love. This one verse, Ephesians 5:33, is the world's best marriage advice. If a husband and wife apply it, they are guaranteed to solve and avoid countless misunderstandings and problems and build a harmonious marriage filled with respect and love. I'm Joel Hilliker, and we're coming to the end of Trumpet Hour. Send us your comments on the program by emailing letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to my guests today, Andrew Miller and Dwight Falk. Thanks also to our technical staff, Dwight Falk and Josh Sloan. And I'll leave you with this thought from Voltaire. It is dangerous to be right when the government is wrong. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
Been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.